Australia, Melissa Creamer on iTunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world, and we welcome our listeners on FM in Canberra, Australia, and Wellington, New Zealand. I'm Henry in Sydney, Australia, and so is Melissa Creamer, our correspondent, but she's in Melbourne. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Henry. How are you going?
Alive and kicking. Now, I'm hoping that my girlfriend Caroline will bring me a beer soon, because it is that time of the day. Now, you've just been to Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. How, and as part of your new job, tell me about this.
Well, I'm working for a company that's based in the United Arab Emirates, and I was sent there just to get a feel for the head office. And my first time, I have been to Dubai before, but it was quite some time ago, and it was like a 10-hour stopover where I explored the city by myself. So, yeah, it was something quite new for me.
So you have been to Dubai, which is the biggest city. I think it's the capital city. Is that right? I'm not sure. Anyway, Dubai and Abu Dhabi. Do you think they're very different cities now that you've gone to Abu Dhabi?
It's hard for me to say because it's been so long since I went to Dubai and I didn't actually stay there. I do believe they are quite different, however. So, yes, hard to comment
for
me.
Fair enough. You know, I've been to United Arab Emirates and both Abu Dhabi and Dubai. And what I noticed was really interesting. Because of the airline we took, they didn't fly into Dubai. They flew into Abu Dhabi. And they'd give us a free courtesy bus to get us to Dubai, which I thought was that was an interesting thing they did, isn't it?
I think they do that both ways. Like the airline that flies into Dubai will also do that for Abu Dhabi. But just to put into some context, the time I visited Abu Dhabi was 2003, so it was 20 years ago.
No, you mean Dubai.
Yes, that's what I meant. Sorry.
Yeah, that's okay.
I'm tired.
So it's, you are tired, and I'm not surprised. You know, the thing is, going to Europe, I did Abu Dhabi and Dubai, or UAE, in 2012. And what I noticed coming from Sydney, Australia, and going to Dublin in Ireland, I was going there. The interesting thing is that airline actually that flies to Abu Dhabi actually flies directly to Dublin. But what really intrigued me was when... If just for our listeners in Europe, in Australia, it's a very long trip, obviously, to go to the UK or whatever. And, you know, you normally drop off, you know, you change flights in Hong Kong or Singapore. And that's an 8-hour flight roughly from Sydney. But with United Arab Emirates, it's like a much longer flight in the first leg, isn't it?
It's about 14 hours, give or take.
Yeah.
Yes. And yes.
I find that very frustrating, but it's like you get the whole bad stuff done, you know, and then you got the shorter flight getting into, you know, the UK or whatever. Now, what do you think of the United Arab Emirates? They don't drink for a start, but, you know, expats certainly drink a lot. Everyone smokes. I was in a pub. I wasn't smoking at the time, and I was in a pub there, and they were playing Dallas from the 1980s on TV, and everyone's smoking and drinking. And I thought I'd just gone back into the 1980s. It's a very interesting place. This is very different from other cities and countries around the world, it has to be said. Would you agree?
Yes. So what I was told when I was there was the population of Abu Dhabi is something like 10 million people. Mm-hmm. But the population of foreigners makes up about 8 million.
Yeah.
And the population of locals is like 1.8.
Yeah. Isn't it fascinating? I was in a taxi, in a taxi to Dubai, and I was talking to the guy, and he said, you know, 80% of people who live in this, I think it was Dubai, in this city, 80% are expats. That's amazing, isn't it?
I was trying to speak Arabic to people, and I'm like giving up because, you know, I had a couple of Pakistani taxi drivers. I had a guy from Nepal as well. I had a chauffeured driver from Kenya. So I had interactions with people from all over the world. There were a lot of Filipinos working there as well. So it was really interesting and a real big cultural mix. And I find that the Islamic culture is very strong, despite the fact that 8 million plus people are not Emirati. And so... you know, I went to a restaurant and I wanted to have some, you know, Middle Eastern cuisine, and they didn't have beer, which is obviously understandable. And so I ended up going back to my hotel to have a drink. I just needed a beer before I went to bed, and because it'd been a really long day, you know.
Yeah.
And I walked into the pub, and I was staying. Can we mention chains on this station or not?
Of course.
I was staying at a Marriott, and they had a sports bar, and so there were a few Emiratis in there watching the football. English football Premier League was on. And the first thing that hit me was the cigarette smoke.
Mm.
And so everyone was in the bar smoking indoors. And I was like, oh, remember this? It's quite a novelty, even though you know that it goes on. And so, yeah, I sat in the bar and I spoke to a guy who was like head of finance for a local bank there. And we had a good chat about the economy and things like that and you know, what's going on. And what I was told is that, you know, UAE is really rich because of oil.
Yeah.
And in the foreseeable future, they know that oil is not going to be a hot commodity because we're moving away to more sustainable fuel options. And so what they're trying to do is just really build up tourism. And what struck me as being just really different about Abu Dhabi was just how new everything is.
Mm.
I didn't see a single old vehicle on the road. And I mentioned this to my chauffeur, and I was being driven around in a luxury BMW, and chauffeur driver, I should say. And then he said to me, when cars reach a certain amount of kilometres, they have to be upgraded. And so Africa gets a whole heap of cars from Abu Dhabi because of the kilometres. And he said, like, the car that I drive would be 2 years old, but it's deemed to be like too old because of the kilometers on it. And for that day, he'd driven between Abu Dhabi and Dubai, and he'd clocked up about 900 Ks in a day, which is the equivalent of, say, driving between Sydney and Melbourne. And so obviously he's racking up more kilometers. So they don't have old cars on the road. The oldest
they're not allowed to.
I saw was some old battered trucks, but you know, like there's no. I didn't see any old buildings, and obviously I didn't have the time to visit extensively. But I didn't see any old buildings either. And then it's really hard to get local food. I went to a restaurant that was suggested by a work colleague that's local and lives there. And it was an Italian place, and like it was $65 for a glass of bloody white wine.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Oh, like honestly, and
because they don't drink, of course, and I guess
no. But here's the thing: to be in contrast, right? 8 million people are foreigners.
Yes.
So you would think that, and I've been in these countries before, and I've you know, I lived in Egypt, and I've been in Tunisia and Syria, and other places, right? You would think that with the large amount of people, but of course it's controlled by the royal family. But yeah, I found the alcohol really expensive. I ordered like a truffle pizza, which was also around $65, and it didn't taste like truffles at all. I was like, what? I felt really ripped off.
I found in Thailand Vietnam, that they don't drink wine, and they had wine in this bar that we were in, or restaurant actually, and the wine was, you know, so corked and old because no one buys it. It was awful and expensive. To your point regarding, you know, the amount of alcohol, the price of alcohol in the UAE, it's got to be remembered that expats get paid a fortune to work there, and they're probably, you know, charging them more because they can.
Well, I mean, I remember, and we're talking about 2002, but in 2002, I went to a very fancy restaurant on the Bund in Shanghai in China. And, you know, our wine options were like $50 for a bottle of Jacob's Creek.
Oh,
and we
God.
All know that that's the bottom of the rung, and that was 20 years ago, right?
Oh, my God.
And so, like, I was able to get a staff discount. How funny is that? I got a staff discount at this restaurant that I went to. So I was like, okay, I can afford the wine because I get this staff discount. But the discount was on the food only and not on the alcohol.
Yeah.
But I was like, well, how many times am I going to be here? I feel like wine. I'm just going to have it. So my first glass was like $60, $65. And then the second one was about $50. I can't believe I'm saying that. How did I spend that much money?
Oh, you just do in the moment. You know, it's interesting.
Yes.
A friend of ours, when we went to UAE, he said, look, go for, you know, posh hotel. It costs more, but what they do is they give you free drinks. And I'm talking spirits at 6 in the evening. You go up to this place and you get little niblets and you get free booze. We thought, yeah, it's worth it.
Well, I got a pint of Hoegaarden at the Marriott. And it was going to be about 22 or 23 Australian dollars. And with the discount, it cost about 13. So I did okay with the pint because I got 20% off or something ridiculous. So maybe it was a little bit more. So that was okay, you know. But I just, like, I don't mind paying money for good food and good wine if it's good food and good wine. But when I pay that much for truffles on a pizza – and they don't taste like truffles. And then, you know, the waiter came over. How was your meal? I hope everything was great. And I'm like, no, it didn't taste like truffles at all. You know?
It's interesting, isn't it? Another thing we noticed when we were going from Abu Dhabi to Dubai was they had grass. And, you know, they're so wealthy. They just made it happen. You know, it's a desert, right? Did you notice that?
Yes.
I mean, bizarre.
I was walking along the Emirati Palace, and it was all these flowers, and I'm hopeless with telling you what kind of flowers they were, but it was so fragrant. It was like walking through a field of, you know, perfume. It was ridiculous. And I went to the palace, and this is where you can get like that really expensive cup of coffee with gold leaf in it. And I'm not a coffee drinker, so I didn't indulge in that, but they've got this really fancy, famous burger there, and I was so tempted to try this burger, but it was like $75 for a camel burger with gold leaf on it.
Yes. Yes.
I didn't buy it.
You didn't buy it. Well, I was with my girlfriend in Abu Dhabi or Dubai. I don't know which, where I had breakfast, and I had a camel burger for breakfast, and it didn't seem any different to me, you know?
Yes.
It's just our perception of these things, you know?
Well, I think it was $75 because it had gold leaf on it. But what are you doing eating gold anyway? What is it going to do to you?
God knows. It sounds
in the toilet later, aren't you?
Sounds kind of dangerous to me.
From Melbourne, Australia, Melissa Creamer on Bondi Tunes International.
If you've just joined us, I'm Henry for Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting from Sydney in Australia. Melissa Creamer is our correspondent in Melbourne. You know what I found quite spiritual, and I think it happens in the morning and the afternoon, is the prayers. And they're broadcast all over the cities, you know?
It happens five times a day. So
oh, does it?
There's five pillars of Islam, and if you question me now, I'm going to forget them. There is no God but Allah, and Muhammad is his prophet. You have to pray five times a day. You shall give a certain percentage of your wage to the poor. You should partake in Ramadan. And if you can afford it once in your lifetime, you should make the pilgrimage to Mecca.
Right.
So and are there
poor people? I'm just asking that question because the country is so rich. And
No, but if you think about Indonesia in parts of Egypt and Morocco and Tunisia. So one of the big parts of the Muslim calendar is the biblical story where God asked, was it Abraham, to sacrifice his son? And when he saw that he was willing to do it, at the last minute, he let him sacrifice the lamb instead. So every year in the Muslim calendar, as acknowledgement, you should sacrifice a lamb if you can afford it. And if you're in Tunisia or Turkey or Egypt, you'll go around for a period and you'll see all these lambs and goats like attached to people's balconies and their apartments and on apartment roofs and things like that. Mm. And they sacrifice it. And in Australia, you don't tend to see this, and I don't know how much of it goes on here, but instead of sacrificing it here, I know a lot of Muslims will actually put money forth to have it done for a family, say in Indonesia or somewhere else. And then we have these live exports of sheep during this period because they get sent over there for the slaughter. And, of course, there's a lot of animal activists who don't agree with it because many don't make the journey over because there's so many packed onto freighter ships.
So are you talking about us sending livestock to...
Yes,
really?
To the Middle East.
I didn't know that. Oh.
Yes, we do. And, I mean, when I was in Turkey, and we're going back over 10 years, you know, it was about $300 or $400 for a sheep to sacrifice. It's quite a lot of money for families to purchase, right? So it's a big deal, and it's a big part of their calendar. So
just seems bizarre to me. And I do believe if you're going to get your car filled up, it costs like 50 cents per gallon. Nothing.
But also, when I told them how much a packet of cigarettes was here and how much fuel was, they couldn't believe it.
And here, in Australia.
Yeah, over there. They couldn't believe how much we paid. Like,
I know.
I'm like, you know, packet of cigarettes in Australia. And they're like, what? And so I went to our head office, Henry.
Yes.
And I've worked in corporate offices in London. I worked in an office in Bangkok. I worked briefly for a Canadian company, and I went to visit their head office in Toronto. So, you know, I've been to some other countries' offices before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was there in our head office, and I noticed this guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
All he did all day was just take drinks to people's table. And I go, hey, is that guy's job just to take drinks to people's tables? And I was with a guy that I like, he'd come from the Saudi Arabian office, right? And he goes, what do you mean is that guy just going around getting tea? He goes, what happens in your country? I said, you get up and you go and
get your own bloody tea.
Tea yourself. He goes, what? He goes, what? And I said, well, there's a whole, like, culture around, like, there's a whole water cooler culture where you get up, you go to the water cooler, and you talk.
And you gossip, and you talk about the TV show on the night before.
You catch up on the trashy crap that you watched on the reality show.
Yeah.
And I said, like, there's none of that here. I said, that's great for productivity. And they're like, it's nothing to do with productivity. We're hiring people to work, like, we're arming the workforce. And then later on, I'm like, this guy has got all these different cups, and this office is huge, and how does he know who to take the cups to? And the Saudi guy goes, are you still on this, Melissa? I said, I'm fascinated by it, right? Like, I can't imagine. And then one of the locals, she's actually – one of the girls in the office works there is from South Africa. And she said, because you're not allowed to eat at your desk, but you can drink at your desk. However, during Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, when they fast – they can't drink at their desks either out of respect for the staff that are fasting, right?
Oh.
So she said during Ramadan, you're forced to go down to a cafe and, you know, get a drink and, you know, have your drink away from everyone because you can't do it at your desk. And she goes, it's really great for socializing because we don't do that any other time of the year. So, I just found it fascinating that it's the guy's only job, right? But there were Manchester United cups. There was this sports fan. There was an Arsenal. Like, he knew which cup belonged to who and what they were drinking and everything else. And, that seems like a trivial thing, but it's something cultural that I picked up on.
It's huge. You know? You know, English soccer or football, as they call it in England, football, is very popular in Africa and all these countries that Britain took over in the past. I don't know what their history is with United Arab Emirates. I'm pretty sure they didn't take them over. But it's interesting how that it's the most popular sport in the world, soccer.
I mean, did you see when the World Cup was on, all the fans for Argentina in Bangladesh?
No.
It was huge. This guy in Bangladesh, they all had these tuk-tuks set up and everyone was just going for Argentina. Like, it was something else. You know, I mean, football is the international language, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I just wanted to let you know a little story. Myself and my girlfriend Caroline went to United Arab Emirates in 2012, and we, I never hold her hand in public, but for some reason I did, and she said, "You can't do that. You can't walk around the street. You can't kiss your partner or girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. You can't hold hands." And the other thing was, when we were registering in the hotel, we had to pretend we were married.
Yes, and so with the company that I'm working for, we went through, UAE etiquette, about not shaking hands and, what you can wear and what you can't. And if they don't, like, in terms of your staff benefits, they'll recognize married couples, but not de facto.
Yes, it's
You know,
bizarre.
it's very interesting. And we had to, when you're doing like inductions and we played that game, two truths and a lie. So you had to tell two truths and you had to guess which one the lie was out of the third thing. And this guy goes, "I've got three kids, and I'm married, and then something else." And the local member of staff said, "Well, you're married, so obviously the part about having kids is true, because if you weren't married, you wouldn't have kids."
What?
And I was sitting with a group that were from like Morocco and Saudi, and I said, "In my country, a lot of people have children without being married."
And the other way around, they're married without children.
Is that what I said? No,
No,
yeah.
I think it's, no, you said what you said, but it's the other way around as
Yes.
well,
Yes. Yes. And she said something to me. I said, "Look, I'm not having, I don't have children, and I've missed the boat on that." "Oh, inshallah, it's not too late for you. God will deliver for you. God is great. God is merciful. He will bring this for you." And I was like, kind of looking at my watch, going, "No, I don't think so."
Were they talking about you, Melissa?
Yeah, like me, like
Oh,
that, because then
sorry.
they're like
Okay.
having children, and they probably don't know my age. But I said, "I've missed the boat on that, like, due to my age." No.
Oh,
Oh,
maybe they've got a point,
yes. It's just, it's been some time since I've, been in such a religious country. Because why Turkey is religious, it's not the same as being in the Middle East.
Yes. And
Yeah.
of
That's
course you
the thing.
lived with your boyfriend in Turkey, didn't you?
Yes. And I had a few foreigners that lived in the same town, like expats, and their neighbors were forever hanging over the fence and offering them tea and sticking their nose in their business, right? And I lived in an apartment block with just there were three flats on top of each other, and the bottom flat didn't share the same entrance, but I shared an entrance with the lady underneath me. Now, the lady underneath me was a prostitute. And normally, if you're a prostitute in Turkey, you don't do prostitution in the town that you're from. You do it elsewhere because of, don't want to bring shame and everything else.
Identity,
Yes. But apparently, what was different about my neighbor was that she was local, right? And people kind of knew that she was a prostitute, and she kept to herself. Didn't really speak to me. There was no offering of tea, and it suited me because I didn't have to sit there and say hi every time we bumped into each other in the street. And then people were so busy talking about the fact that there was a prostitute there that no one really cared that there was a foreign Catholic girl living with her Muslim boyfriend out of wedlock.
You're funny that, isn't it?
It's in my favor.
It's all about priorities.
You're a good friend.
Now, if you've just been to Abu Dhabi, you've been to Dubai, I think you said around 20 years ago. Would
Yes.
you live there? Because expats, a lot of them do, obviously. Would you?
Look, I think it would be an interesting place to live because apparently, it's tax free. So when I met this
That's
guy,
handy.
when I met the guy at the hotel bar, who's like head of finance for a big Abu Dhabi bank, he goes, "Have you thought about living here?" He goes, "This place is tax free." Because when I told him about how much we pay in tax in Australia as part of our wage, he couldn't believe it. And he said, just come over here and work for 2 or 3 years and save some money up and then go home. And I thought,
Buy a house.
not a bad idea, you know.
Could you live a
But
could yeah, sorry.
it is expensive there. And if you're hired as an expat, they also give you a housing allowance because Abu Dhabi's got so much money. So they just expect that everyone can afford it. So the housing in Abu Dhabi compared to Dubai is a lot more.
Is that right? Oh.
Yes, so I was told.
I would have thought it'd be the other way around. I would have thought, but not so.
Yes.
So all in all, did you have a good experience?
I did. I mean, it's like, you know, I miss traveling. I love traveling. To be out there, you know, on the road again. I also, you know, I because of where my hotel was located, I had to take taxis to go places. But then once I was downtown, I hopped on local buses, so I got to see, you know, experience some I guess local culture being on the bus. I got to see downtown, and the contrast between downtown and then, say, one of the islands. What really impressed me, and I know you've been there, Henry, was the mosque.
Yes, indeed, I have. Yes.
And you know, I wasn't going to go. I'm like, how many mosques have I been to? But then I went to the mosque, and you know, the theme of the mosque is tolerance. And you know, all jokes aside, you have to tolerate a lot of gross Instagram people doing, you know, their 1500 selfies.
No.
But aside from that, like, I went in there, and it just felt like a very peaceful and very beautiful space. So I
Were
really enjoyed that.
there other people in there at the time?
There were heaps. There were heaps. There were a lot of foreigners, so it was good to see
Interesting.
foreign people traveling again. I was there when the muezzin started the call to prayer, and just to hear that, like, you know, reverberating across the mosque is something else. I think it's quite a moving experience, even if you don't believe. Just their unwavering faith, you know.
Yeah, it's powerful stuff, isn't it?
Oh, totally. So the mosque was, and like I said, I've been to a few, but that was really moving and really, really beautiful. And then I went to the Louvre Museum, and it's, you know, the Louvre has built a museum outside of Paris. Imagine.
Yeah, imagine, indeed.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the French built that statue in New York, you know.
Yeah, yes. Oh, the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah, that it was built in France. They gave it as a
Do you know who that
present.
was built for?
No.
Okay, now I'm happy for someone to fact check me and prove me wrong, but years ago, and we're talking again 2003 when I worked in Egypt, that was supposed to stand at the entrance to the Suez Canal, but the Egyptians didn't want to pay for it. So the French got annoyed and said, "You don't want to pay for it? We'll just give it away to America for nothing."
Really,
Yeah.
it's amazing. I just love that story. Obviously, France and America got on very well, and I think it must have been the 1800s or something, or late
Yeah, so
1700s.
yeah, there you go. I need to fact check that, but I remember reading it in a travel guidebook many, 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 many years ago, and I've quoted it ever since. When was the
That's
Suez
fascinating.
Canal constructed? Do we know?
Sorry?
Remember?
Oh, wait. Oh, no, I don't. I could Google
Yeah.
it, but it's too difficult.
Yeah, no, pretty difficult. Anyway, there you go. It wasn't meant for America, and now it's a symbol of liberty.
It's a beautiful thing.
Oh,
Now,
yeah.
will you be returning to the United Arab Emirates as part of your job from time to time, or not?
I imagine that I probably will.
But you don't know at the moment.
Yes, I imagine that I will. There's a lot of things I didn't get to visit. I didn't get to visit Ferrari World,
Oh, that'd be
which
nice.
has apparently fastest roller coaster in the world, Henry.
And
Yeah.
you didn't get to ride on the sand dunes in a little bike, a little motorbike, which I did, which was hilarious. Excuse
Why did you do that and not a camel?
Isn't it interesting? Well, I just ate the camel
Right.
for breakfast.
Yeah. Someone said, go and do a camel safari. And I said, as a former tour leader who's done camels in like the Sahara Desert and in Egypt, and I've even done one around Esrock. I've got no desire to get on another camel.
Is that
But
right?
here we go. We were talking about how much camels cost, and they cost an absolute fortune. And as part of my induction, the girl that was giving it to us kept telling us to invest our money in a camel. And do you know what else is huge over there?
What?
Falconry.
Falconry?
Yeah, the falcons.
Ah, what do they do with them?
Well, you know, they've got this ancient tradition of falcons, and these birds are, they're looked after more than, better than wives, some of these
Is that right?
falcons, right? And so airlines have this policy that you can bring a little dog on board the plane, but it's got to be in a little carrier that can fit under the seat, and it can't come out of that little bag at any time. However, if there's a falcon on board, no dogs allowed. And when they travel with their falcons, the falcons get a seat, and they have that much money that they pay for a seat in business or first class
That's
per
crazy.
falcon.
That's
Yes.
crazy. Yeah,
Yes.
just before I let you go, Melissa, you did send us a picture on social media of you in your business class. My God, and you were saying, I'm so delighted to be able to fly internationally again. And boy, did you do that in comfort, eh? When you're going to Abu
Absolutely.
Dhabi, yeah.
I have been privileged to fly business class before. I'd worked in travel. I'd flown once with travel. There's been two times in my life where I've talked myself up for an upgrade. I talked myself into an upgrade once on the plane, which is basically unheard of.
I've
Another
done
time,
it. I've done it with
you've done
with
it as well?
yeah.
Gosh.
Well, I was going to the UK and in Sydney, and I actually happened to have a shirt and tie on, so I look kind of respectable. But it was actually the first leg. I think it was to Singapore. No, it was Hong Kong. It was British Airways,
Yes.
and I always ask, and I'm sure you do too. Is it possible to upgrade me? And she said yes. I nearly fell on the floor, and it
Get
was
out of here.
fantastic, you know.
Yeah, amazing. So, I got an upgrade, and I was right at the pointy end of the plane, and I didn't want to sleep because, AUE is 7 hours behind Australia, and I was arriving at midnight, so I wanted to try and stay awake so I could then go to
Of
bed
course.
when I arrived.
Yeah.
And so, the thing is, flying in economy is uncomfortable if you're tall, and it's uncomfortable if you're short. And I know I have a lot of leg room, however, my legs don't really sit on the ground very well because of my height, right? And I often see myself as this kid in like a high chair with its legs dangling. Yeah, and then of course my head doesn't reach the headrest. So trying to get comfortable in a chair is difficult if you're short. It's even worse than you're tall. And it was nice to just stretch out. And I tell you, when the seat is in its upright position and there's this footrest in front of you, I just reach the footrest because of how short I am and how much room there is.
Even in business class, it's not adjustable seats, that kind of
No,
thing.
the seat adjusts, but before it adjusted, there's so much width between the seat and the footrest that my
Yeah.
legs just met it.
So
Like,
you're like a little child at a table.
oh, totally. And then, prior to takeoff, they come around and they give you a they ask you what you're drinking, and then they go, "What would you like to order for your main meal and for your entree? And then, what would you like to have with your main meal?" So then, when the service takes off, they come and bring you a drink to match with what you've ordered. And not only that, they bloody put your tray table down for you. Jeez, I don't even have to put my own tray table down, and they give me that tablecloth. I can,
Fantastic.
but can you justify spending an extra, four, five, 6 grand on that?
Well, I'm guessing your company paid for that.
Yes, I did get an upgrade. I did get an upgrade, but I'm just saying, like,
Yeah,
as an
it's a
individual.
lot of money. It's thousands of dollars, thousands and thousands of dollars on top of being in, a regular seat. Really, it's
So
expensive.
on the way back, I was in the business class lounge at the airport, and there was this Irish dude in his 20s that was drunk. Right? He was there.
No shit.
Exactly right. So, you know, they're giving you, and you get booze at the, at like when you're in the business class lounge, right? So he's drinking and he's like, I don't even know what I'm eating. What am I eating? Is this tofu? I'm like, dude, it's paneer. It's like an Indian vegetarian dish. It's cheese. Like, why didn't you go for the lamb? You could have got lamb and potatoes. You're Irish. Like, what are you doing? He was that drunk. He just grabbed the first thing that he saw. And I was like, oh, buddy, God, stop drinking because they're not going to let you on the next flight.
So he's probably an expat going to work in the United Arab Emirates in Abu Dhabi or Dubai. And it's interesting to note that he was in business class.
Yes, yeah.
Young guy, drunk in business class,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And there was another guy who, he was a little bit inebriated and he started talking to me and he's like, oh, you're Australian. You must be watching the match. And I don't know anything about cricket. And apparently there's a World Series or something. I don't know. Australia was.
Neither do I.
Yeah. And then a couple of the Pakistani, you know, taxi drivers was like, Ricky Ponting. And I'm like, dude, I don't know about cricket. I'll
whatever.
Just with you. Yeah. Very, very, very big deal. You know?
Yeah.
It's just good to be back on a plane, Henry.
Yes. You sounded so excited. You sounded
and
really
a 15-hour flight back. Yes. For 15 hours worth of training.
Isn't it bizarre? Was it interesting, just very quickly, was it interesting working with people from all over the world in that head office or that office you went to?
Oh, yeah, I just
a learning experience.
On their behalf, I just thought it was a really good way to welcome, you know, new starters to the company and just to get a big eye opener and like the tea waller, you know, was something.
Yeah, it was really bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was great.
Okay, look, it's lovely to talk to you as always, Melissa. Thank you for joining me here on Bondi Tunes.
Thank you so much for having me, Henry. It's been a while.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio.
From Melbourne, Australia, Rachel Brunston on Bondi Tunes International.
You're listening to Bondi Tunes International, broadcasting around the world. And we welcome our listeners on FM in Canberra and also in New Zealand on FM. I'm Henry in Sydney. Rachel Brunston is our entertainment reporter and she joins me now from Melbourne. Rach, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks. How are you?
I'm alive and kicking. It's beautifully warm and 80% humidity in Sydney right now. How do you think I feel? Interesting.
Well, soggy.
I feel a bit soggy. That's a good word, soggy. Are you,
yes.
You lived in Canberra for a while, and we are actually on FM on a station called Valley FM in Canada, I was going to say, Canberra. And you could have listened to us on radio. You could listen to yourself on radio.
I could have.
Yes.
Oh, I wish I'd known that at the time.
Rach, you don't care. What about the BAFTAs?
Oh, the BAFTAs are just disappointing in general this year. I mean, first of all, unless you're watching the broadcast, which is really impossible to get nowadays.
It is.
There's nothing on YouTube. There's only grabs on YouTube. There's very little on YouTube. Most of it came from The Independent, of all things. They haven't had rights to anything. BAFTA holds rights to everything. So you just get snippets of bits and pieces. If you want, there's a full show available on YouTube, but it's the red carpet. Nobody cares about that. It's watching famous people arrive in their frocks and then get photographed. It's really stupid. If you want to watch a full version, the only way to do it here is to subscribe to BritBox, and I refuse to do that.
Okay, well, I have you know, a situation where I can watch the BBC. It is on BBC One streaming on iPlayer. But you need to have, what the hell is it called? I've forgotten.
A VPN?
Yes, thank you very much. I've had
quite a right.
I've had half a beer and I feel stoned. Yes, I've got VPN and I just log into London and then I can get access to iPlayer. Loads of people do this around the world, but I'm not interested enough to actually, you know, just watch the whole gig. Do you think it's, you know, two questions. Do you think it's got worse? I mean, you haven't seen this year's, obviously, but do you think it's getting worse? And do you think it's getting, when I asked you about this with the Oscars, is it getting less viewers? Or is that a rhetorical question?
Well, I don't, you know, because I wasn't able to watch, I can't really tell you. What I can tell you, though, is when you've got two Australians taking out the top leading actors awards, well, that's not true. You've got Cate Blanchett, who took out Best Actress, and you've got Austin Butler, who took out the lead actor, and he's winning everything, by the way, for Elvis, yes, in an Australian-made film.
Mm.
That bothers me that I can't watch it if I want to, except if I if people without people extorting money from me, and I find that obnoxious. So, but I couldn't tell in terms of how many people watched it, or there's really no information. There's nothing, and I think from what I've read, because I did read all the and I'm disappointed because I love Richard E. Grant so much.
Oh, so
do I. I would love to have watched him host. And I couldn't. Apparently he sort of went to bits a little bit before the In Memoriam because he's just recently lost his own wife, and that's, you know, really understandable. But, yeah, he sort of had emotional moments. I did get to see, they did allow us, thank you very much, Britain, they did allow us to watch the tribute to the Queen that Helen Mirren delivered, which was very, very nice and lovely and wonderful. But they allowed us to watch the acceptance speeches from the winners of the awards, but you didn't get to see any of the in-between. And the in-between is the stuff that's interesting to me.
Yes,
so,
I agree. I mean,
you know, running through the stuff that won, All Quiet on the Western Front is really interesting film. It's German language, which for starters, now that foreign language films are starting to pick up all these mainstream awards, that's making everything really interesting, I think. They won 7 awards, and the record for the most wins for a film that's not in English. So that was a, you know, historical moment for them. Of course, our lovely Cate Blanchett, she won for Tar. And then there's a whole bunch of people that won for things I've never heard of. Not to say they're not great. As an Irishman, you would have enjoyed The Banshees of Inisherin winning. And the guy who they won Best British Film, which was really funny because the guy who accepted the award could be more Irish if he tried and said, everybody in the cast and crew was saying, we won the what award now? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you won the who's and what. But you know what? It's all great. And I mean, Austin Butler, he's winning everything. He's winning everything. But what I think is interesting about him is that if you see him interviewed, and he was a known actor prior to being Elvis, but he wasn't super well known. And now, of course, he's just blown up the planet. But he's sort of kept this affectation of Elvis. It's like the spirit of Elvis is running around inside of him. And it's really interesting. And he played a lovely tribute to the Presleys as well, who've just recently lost Lisa Marie, shockingly lost Lisa Marie.
Yes, of course.
And they were at the Golden Globes together when he won. That was nice for her to be able to see that. I'm sure she would have loved to have seen all this unfold, and he probably will win the Oscar, although in my view Brendan Fraser should win it. But that's just me being a dedicated Brendan Fraser fan. He's in a movie, if anybody's interested in going, it's in cinemas in Australia now. It's called The Whale.
Yes, I've heard of that.
It's a Darren Aronofsky film. Darren Aronofsky has a style of filmmaking that makes you feel like you're internally going through a car wash, and your mind is being twisted every which way. And it's almost like you've been up for 24 hours with an infant child when you go and see a Darren Aronofsky film. It's quite the experience. But from everything I've read and everything I've seen, Brendan Fraser got a 6-minute standing ovation at the Toronto Film Festival for that movie, and he did the same in Cannes. So, you know, he's definitely a front runner. He won the Golden Globe. He disappeared from our radar for a while, Brendan Fraser, because he had a controversy
He was very dominant in the 90s, if I remember correctly, and the early zeros.
Very dominant. Big movies too, like the you know, the Mummy franchise was his, and the George of the Jungle, whilst it was diabolical, the kids loved it, that franchise, and many other things that he was in. But he disappeared because he was involved in a controversy with at that time head of the Golden Globes, who's recently been sacked over his comments for, you know, being a the Hollywood foreign press is going to stay whitewashed, and that's the way it is. Mm. He's since been shunted, but he was Brendan Fraser brought him up on charges because he was sexually assaulted by this man.
Oh, God.
And so he vanished off the face of the earth, because once people decide that you've made a claim, and if they don't believe you, you're going to get exiled. And it's happened to a lot of actors and actresses when they speak up. But eventually he was exonerated, not the guy from Hollywood Foreign Press. Brendan Fraser was exonerated and welcomed back to Hollywood. He was nominated for the Golden Globe this year, won the Golden Globe, but refused to attend or accept it because that would make him look like a hypocrite, and good for him.
Wow.
So he's back, and in this movie, I've seen bits and pieces of it. I have yet to see the entire thing. I'm hoping it's going to be on a plane in a couple of weeks, Henry. I can watch it there.
Oh, yes, you're going to America.
Yeah, but it's apparently very, very good performance from him, and he's really sort of said, okay, enough is enough. I'm back, and I'm a serious artist, and it's about time I was welcomed back to the fold. And he has been, and he's been celebrated for it. So I'm pulling for him, but I think Austin Butler's going to. It's like Rami Malek a few years ago with playing Freddie Mercury.
Yes, indeed. All Quiet.
People who play real people seem to win.
Yeah, it seems to be a trend, doesn't it? All Quiet on the Western Front. I don't know if you've seen that or not. Of course, it's been done before. It really kicked ass, didn't it? I mean,
it really did.
Best adapted screenplay, you know, they won that, and all the other stuff. And also, you mentioned earlier The Banshees of Inisherin, which is an Irish movie, obviously, even though they won a British prize.
I know. I think that's hilarious.
That is hilarious.
It's cool, but it's hilarious.
Barry Keoghan, who played a young man in that, he's the guy you were talking about who went up on stage, I'm pretty sure. It's hard to believe.
Yeah, he won the supporting actor BAFTA?
Yes, best supporting actor. And I can understand why a lot of people wouldn't understand him, because he has a very strong country Irish accent. But I'm interested. I might look up, try and get... Is All Quiet on the Western Front on Netflix? I have no idea.
I actually don't know. I'm not really sure where it is. I think it might be a cinema thing still, as is the Avatar movie, which didn't make much showing last night. But they're very supportive of the BAFTAs. Have a history of being very, very supportive of European stuff, and they should.
Yes.
You know, it's their neighbourhood, and they should support them. But they do like their foreign language films. Actually, interestingly enough, this is a side note and a bit of a name drop, although you won't know the name. my cousin, whose name's Michael Fiery, he's on the board of BAFTA.
Oh.
And when we were there in London, he took us to BAFTA, to their very posh place where they take their tea. And we had a lovely time afternoon with him at BAFTA, and got photos taken next to great big BAFTAs and all sorts of things. So it was really interesting. But he said they do like a good European film. They're very traditional, but to give so many awards to a foreign language film, I think is just... It's not it wasn't a token. It's clearly a brilliant film.
Yes,
but,
of course.
You know, it's not a token gesture. You can feel when it's token from the Americans. No offense, America, but
yeah,
you can feel when it's token.
Yeah.
You can feel when they're doing something just to do it, like they did with, they did it a couple of years ago, but they've done it with Squid Game, for example, that Korean horror slasher movie. Horror, I don't know if slasher, but it's basically a bloodbath movie, I think it might actually be a series, so correct me if I'm incorrect there, but it's a whole lot of nonsense, right? And it's a bloodbath. It's like
I couldn't watch that
an Oscar
stuff
to a Halloween. Yeah, it's like, and you feel like it was done in a as a token, like you feel like it was done as a we better support something coming from overseas. It's I think it's Korean. I'm fairly certain it's Korean based. But it feels like tokenism to me when they do it. When the Brits do it, you can see they're doing it because it's simply good.
Yes.
And I've probably just said some terrible things about Americans, but I don't mean to, because I know we've got a lot of friends in America, and I'm about to go there, so I don't want to offend anybody.
They would let
but
you on the
You know what I mean? Like it doesn't feel genuine. It feels token, like tokenism to me, but you know, what do you do? Jamie Lee Curtis was brilliant last night, by the way.
Oh yeah, what did she do?
At the BAFTAs. She was just funny. She was just herself, and she said that all Netflix, all famous people use the same Netflix account. It's a secret not known by Hollywood. They all use the
brilliant.
Same. And the password is Sir_Patrick_Stewart.
Brilliant.
And he was mildly amused. Wasn't super amused, but he was mildly amused. I don't think he could hear her. But yeah, she was great. She was funny as always. Other than that, I couldn't tell you what happened because the world doesn't want me to know.
Excuse me. I think there must be some reason why they're restricting this. I mean, you know, it's the same with the Oscars, but to a lesser extent, I think, where, you know, when I, you know, do interviews like this, I go onto YouTube and I get stuff. Funny stuff. With the Golden Globes, of course, it's Ricky Gervais, and they have his intro. You mentioned Richard E. Grant compared this, did he? Did he do the...
Again, don't know.
Oh, I see what you mean. Okay.
He appeared in a vampire cape, and I know there was a tiny snippet because they do these kind of best moments of, and the best moments of were about a minute long, and they were just really quick grabs. But I know he said, and nobody will be getting slapped on my watch.
yes, said, I saw unless that. It's on
the,
yes.
Unless it's on the back.
Yes, thought, brilliant stuff.
Well, that's nice, but and he was in a vampire cape for some reason. At some point, I'm sure I'm going to be able to stream it on something. But until I can, they've completely shut us out.
It's a disgrace, and this is all to do with rights. You know, it's the BBC, and they're pretty. You know, BBC can be very, you know, strict about stuff. Something I just wanted to mention. Someone mentioned to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, or if you know or not. People who got the gongs were all white.
That is very true. It was. When I read the list, actually, it struck me as a whitewash.
A whitewash.
There were people of colour nominated. One would have thought that, you know, the likes of Angela Bassett, or who did the latest Black Panther movie, or even Viola Davis, who's picked up a couple of awards this season for I Am Woman King. There is a whole bunch of and a whole array of people that potentially every group had a nominee who was not a whitewashed person, is a woman, a woman color. Or a man of color. But, yeah, I mean, it seemed – I was reading it and I'm going, ooh, this is getting whiter and whiter and whiter as the night progresses. And I thought, you know what? But that's okay. You hand the award to the person who's the best.
Yeah.
And they haven't diverted away from anything that's been happening so far this season. Like, the people who are winning are still winning.
Yeah, and you know – in America, this would be a huge issue, but I don't think the British – are going to jump on this bandwagon of, oh, only white people. You know, I think it would be a problem. If it was the Golden Globes, you know, you'd have all the rubbish street newspapers over there just trashing the hell out of it because they didn't have black people, you know. But I don't think the British aren't like that, I don't think.
Interestingly, there was a little performance that you can see snippets of. A girl by the name of Ariana, I forget her last name. I apologize. I meant to remember it. Mm-hmm. She did. She played. She won an Oscar, a Golden Globe, or a SAG, or something last year for her take on West Side Story. She was in the remake of West Side Story and won awards for that. This year at the BAFTAs, she did a kind of a little musical number that was mostly a rap, and it included all the female nominees that night. And she did a little rap and she wrote a little thing and she had some dancers and a choreographer. Well, today she has been absolutely decimated on Twitter. And it wasn't so bad. It was fine. It was just, it was a bit naff. But it was suitable for the BAFTAs. It was suitable for that audience. And she's got absolutely trashed all over social media today. So she's actually shut down her Twitter account as a result.
Yes,
and
I
that's
saw
mean-spirited.
That. Yeah.
That's mean-spirited.
It is really,
she just
isn't
was
it?
Doing her best. She was invited to go. She's an artist. She's a singer. She's a dancer. That's what she does primarily. Mm. And to be that vicious, and you know what? I would like to see these people get up and do something like that. It's terrifying. And it's very difficult, and it's particularly when you're in a room full of your peers and famous people and professionals, and you know, it's not, you're not playing at somebody's birthday party. This is a big deal. I'd like to see these these people try and have a turn at getting up in a hot pink jumpsuit and rapping everybody's name like that. I would like to see them try. I bet you they can't.
Yes, just to let her listen, so you were talking about Ariana DeBose, or DeBose.
Thank you.
She portrayed Anita in the 2021 film West Side Story. Isn't Google a wonderful thing?
She was in Rita Moreno's character. Rita Moreno played the original Anita, and Rita Moreno's got a rich career, and she was just marvellous in the first one, and then Ariana DeBose was fantastic in the remake, and that movie did very, very well. That was a Spielberg movie, and it did very, very well.
Yeah.
And they just were horribly brutal to her on social media. That's why I hate social media so much. Just gives people excuse to be horrible. Like Beth, for example. She's
your daughter.
People are trolling her about her.
Didn't they take over a Facebook account and stuff like that?
They did. They did all sorts of things. And so she's shut down most of her social media now, even though what she's trying to do is not win an award, but she's trying to help people find housing when they're down and out. And I don't think, you know, ripping somebody apart for doing something like that is just, trolls are terrible. They just, they have no place.
Yeah. You know, we've got to go. This whole business of social media and trolls and all that stuff, it's a relatively new thing. And I think the governments of the world and, you know, corporations need to take more responsibility for their involvement or what they allow, particularly governments and state and federal. Rachel, I would ask you what you thought overall of these awards, the BAFTA awards, but I can't because you haven't seen it, because you can't see it in this country. Will someone in this country just make this possible? It's ridiculous.
The only thing we can see is what the news outlets have been able to grab from the BBC. So the winners are making half of their speech. Yeah. It's very, very limited, and I'm very, very disappointed. Usually one way or another you can see something. But the good news is that I think I'm going to be in the States for Oscars.
BBC. It'll be on demand on BBC America. That will be on your list of cable channels over there, BBC America. They will have it on demand for sure. So that's a way of getting it. But you might be too busy.
I will, but at night I won't. And at night I'll be going, what's on the telly here? What can I watch now? What can I soak up now that I cannot get at home?
Yeah. Okay. Well, look, Rachel, so all you need is VPN. Just saying. Rachel,
I don't know how to operate the things. You have to teach me.
I will teach you. I'll send you a tutorial. Rachel Brunson, you're our entertainment reporter, and thank you so much for coming on to our show. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
This is Bondi Tunes International. This is Real Radio. Hello, everybody. This is Henry for Bondi Tunes International. You're listening to our two-hour weekly chat show. But hey, we also have a music show called Love is on the Air, where I invite you to join me for an hour of love songs spanning five decades. It airs on this station, so check the schedule for Love is on the Air. Oh, my date has arrived. I'll see you soon.
Love is on the air from Bondi Tunes International.
Henry O'Donovan.